Blog Talk Radio.
More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet. 7 continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday. 30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lammick, Paul Greco of Melnick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on.
Friday the 13th, in full effect. Now, I know this is Halloween, Halloween theme, but this is a Friday the 13th I will never forget. Sigmund Bloom of the Audible with us tonight, live on Red vs. Blue. 60 seconds.
One bleeds red, and one bleeds blue. Two friends, one heated rivalry. It's intense. It's no holds barred. It's game time.
All right, let's go!
On Red versus Blue Sports Talk Radio, with your hosts, Scott Atkins and Michael Trent. Scott and Mike and their versatility bring new light to many topics in and out of the world of fantasy sports. Guests can reach the show by calling 347-324-5404. Red vs. Blue Sports Talk Radio, where Planet Red and Big Blue Nation collide. Let's hope they're still friends afterwards. Here they are, Scott and Mike.
Hey, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to another jam-packed edition of Red vs. Blue Sports Talk Radio, wherever you may be. Thanks for making us part of your night. We've had a wild Friday the 13th, and like I said in the intro there, yeah, that's Halloween theme music, but man, what a week. If you guys read any of the advertisements for this show, we mentioned a couple of things that we were going to talk about. Grand Theft Auto, AR-15s. I think we put guns as a key word, the lake. It was just a wild, wild night right as Friday the 13th kicked off. I know a lot of you guys were watching the basketball game last night. Syracuse took on UConn and went into 6 overtimes. And, Mike, to me, that was the biggest game that I've seen in the history of college basketball.
You know what, Scott? That was amazing. I'm sitting there. When I got off work, I'm listening to it on the radio, and then I get home after a 45-minute drive from work to home, and it's on. And I'm like, you know, these guys can go to 7, 8, 9 overtimes. I don't care because it was that much fun to watch. And I used to couldn't stand when they would say, well, I'm tired. These are 18 to 22-year-old kids. 18 to 22-year-olds.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what? They were. And those coaches, Jim Boeheim, Jim Calhoun, they were tired. And it was an epic affair. It was one of the best college basketball games that will ever be at the Madison Square Garden. So, it was something else.
I feel the same way, Mike. And, again, we are live out of Indianapolis. This is Red vs. Blue Sports Talk Radio. I'm your host, Scott Atkins, team legacy in the world of high-stakes fantasy football. My Big Blue co-host is Michael Trent from Brandenburg, Kentucky. And, Mike, I know Kentucky had a hard fall today, but we're going to talk about a lot of Louisville and Kentucky basketball nearing the end of the show. We've got a special guest this week, Sigmund Bloom from the Audible and Draft Guys, one of the authorities that we like to think of on Dynasty Football. And we're going to talk the NFL Combine, the Pro Day. We've got a lot of questions that we want to ask Sig. But first, we want to talk about this Friday the 13th, man. And I'm sitting up watching this Syracuse-UConn game, and what a game. You know, overtime 1, overtime 2, overtime 3. Mike, I think the statistic was that Syracuse, as I'm watching this, did not lead at one point in any of the 5 overtimes until the 6th overtime.
You know,
and so this team constantly met the challenge and just survived and survived and survived. And I said, this is happening. I said it after about overtime four. I was like, they're going to win this game. I don't know how, but they're going to win this game. And they pulled it out.
You know, it's funny because I was seeing the same thing. It's like, now, wait a second. Syracuse, they haven't led at one time during this game, whether it was first half, second half, first overtime, third overtime, fourth overtime. No matter, but they just, you know, survived. That's just what they did, and then it happened. And Jim Boeheim, he was pulling out every stop and every player possible,
because in
a long game like that, you know, you're going to lose players because of fouls, and they just made things happen there in the sixth overtime. They just blew UConn out, and it was. It was something, but it was one heck of a game, and it's something that you can look back on that, you know, you just remember it.
Well, so I'm sitting there in the bed with my wife, and we're sitting there just saying, holy cow, we're going to remember where we were when we watched this game. This is just one of those games that gave you that feeling. If you're going to remember where you were the night you watched Syracuse play UConn to six overtimes.
Absolutely.
And you know, each team, there's hardly any players left. They've got guys on each team, at least two guys on each team that hadn't played, like, you know, four or five games all year and maybe 20 minutes combined total throughout the year, and they're on the floor, and everybody's dead tired. And okay, so I'm teasing you guys, all right? So I'm watching this game, and you know, the game's over, great. All right, we've watched the game, we turn it off. We flip it on something else, and about that time, I get a loud knock on the door. One of those knocks on the door that you're like, "Holy shit! What the heck is going on here?"
Bam, bam, bam!
Slamming on the door, doorbell, 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 three or four times. Okay, so you know, I'm thinking, all right, I'm gonna have to grab my protection. So I grab what I need to grab, my piece, and then I start walking down the stairs, and my wife says, "No, you know what? It's the cops. They're in the front yard and they're in the backyard." So, okay, well, so I go ahead and walk down the stairs, and I'm like, I decide to open up the door, and I peek out, and I'm like, this better be good. And one of them asked me, he says, are you Scott? And I'm like, yeah, that's me. What you need? He said, Scott, where's your truck at? I said, my truck? I said, which truck? He said, the white one. I said, well, it better be in my driveway. And he said, well,
you were looking for a first-round draft pick.
I said, well, why don't you come out here and take a look for me? So I'm out here in my boxers and a T-shirt, and I come walking outside, and it's freezing here in Indianapolis, okay? And I walk outside, and sure enough, my Trailblazer, I just got an 06 Trailblazer, is gone. It's not there. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? And he said, you mind if I step in? I was like, no, come on in, guys, come on in. It was cold. They walk inside, and these guys are all business at this point. They're glaring at me. They're just checking me out. They're analyzing every word I say. And they said, where were you tonight? You know, what have you been doing? How long have you been home? When's the last time you saw your car? All those questions. And I'm like, okay. So I'm answering these questions. I'm like, guys, what's going on? He said, don't worry about it. Well, let us ask the questions. And then they say, would you mind a field sobriety test? Okay. So at this point, I'm like, you know, even if I've been drinking, it's none of your business. Let's have a shot right now. But I'm like, yeah, that's fine, whatever. I haven't been drinking. So, you know, they do the follow your finger kind of thing. Don't move your head or whatever. I'm like, okay, what the heck is going on? And about a couple of minutes of that, they're appeased. They're satisfied. They're like, okay, look, here's the deal. Your truck is down here at the bottom of the lake. Somebody reported it, seeing it down here at the bottom of the lake. Somebody stole it. I don't know how long they've had it. But they're down here at the bottom. Like, why don't you get some clothes on and come on down and we'll check it out. So I'm like, okay, man, this is crazy. Anyway, we go down there. I get down there, and I kid you not, Mike, there are four fire trucks. There are at least six emergency ambulance vehicles, EMTs. This is Hendricks County in Avon, just west of Indianapolis. There are at least four squad cars. There is a TV channel, Fox 59 News. This is by the time I get there. They're already here, okay? So they're, I mean, I guess by the time they got it up enough, they could kind of see the license plate and go look and see who it was, okay? By the time I get down there, the back window is shattered in the lake. It's just shattered. They've already, they, you know, they obviously wanted to use one of these fancy new tools that they had. And they knocked the back window out. And the first thing they're looking for, I guess, are bodies. I don't know what they're looking for. They go in there. They check it out. They come back in. They say there's nobody in there. And, you know, they got a couple of tow trucks. I guess they got some competition for tow trucks. They had two big tow trucks there, Zor style, and huge, big tow trucks that could pull anything out. And, you know, we sit out in the cold for about an hour and a half, 2 hours while they pull it out and everybody kind of leaves. They set up these big spotlights so they can see what's going on. They got divers down in the water all wading in there. I'm like, what in the hell is going on? This is
They're looking for golf balls.
This is Freaky Friday the 13th, man. this is insane.
Man, hey, Scott, you've had one hell of a Friday the 13th, no doubt about it. I mean, when you tell me about that earlier today, oh, my goodness. And please understand, folks, I mean, this guy is mesmerized about what's going on.
Yeah.
It's just, it's one thing after another. It's like, oh, my goodness, my truck is gone. You got the cops sitting there going, okay, what's your name,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and going over and over again. That is crazy. Only thing you can say is, well.
So anyway, check this out. Look, so I get in. So they say, okay, we need to get a statement from you. We need to get a statement. So come on in the squad car. I get in the squad car, and they get in the back seat, obviously. This is Hendricks County Sheriff Department, okay? A little podunk town, okay? Next to Indianapolis.
Did they give you a Krispy Kreme donut?
Dude, listen, I get in this car, and I'm kidding you not. This is technology. Like, you wouldn't believe the technology they've got in here, okay? I mean, not to mention just the laptops with the full screens and the
cameras. They know where you are and where you're going.
He's got like three different video cameras in his car. He sees three different angles, and he's got on the top of his roof, he's got an AR-15. He's like ready for war. Okay, this is like SWAT. He's just a Hendricks County sheriff. I'm telling you, these officers are armed and ready for. I don't know what they're ready for. I mean, revolt. Rebellion, revolution. I mean, I don't know. They're ready for the militia to come and kill them all. I mean, they're really ready for anything. This guy had an AR-15. He's fully armed. He's got a couple of other long, like, bat-type things, and maybe they're, like, stun weapons. All right, I'm serious. I'm like, I can't believe this. So anyway, they tow my car. They get it out of the lake. They tow it. I mean, it's, you know, several feet of water in the Trailblazer as I open up the door, man. It's just, you know, all my briefcase is just completely ransacked, looted, and papers everywhere, and nothing where it needs to be. Everything's stripped out of it and gone. And, man, so they say, you know, come check it out. We'll look at it tomorrow. So, you know, Saturday, I spent my Saturday going to the tow company. They already had picked it up. I had to chase it back down to the other spot, the auto auction, because I'm sure it's totaled. I get to the auto auction. They pull it up, you know, lay it in front of me. I go inside of it. They've got the steering wheel tied up with a seat belt. They've got a concrete brick laying on the gas pedal.
Why am I laughing?
They got a brick on the gas pedal where they just shoved it into the pond. And then, so I'm opening up trying to gather some of my stuff. I pull up the compartment, and there's a loaded 45 sitting right there in the console. There's a loaded 45 sitting in the console with full clip. And I'm like, okay. This is crazy. They did all this work and they didn't even check, you know, the vehicle. Anyway, we get through. He comes and he picks up the Glock or the 45, and then he's on his way. And I'm sitting here with a total Trailblazer. So that's the story.
Well, one thing about it, Scott, is, you know, I mean, that really stinks. I mean, the whole deal. That's got to be so frustrating to go through that entire thing. Bob Knight will be the coach of Georgia. He will bring the kids up right.
All right, man. Well, listen, we've got a lot to talk about. I spent the first 15 minutes on this Freaky Friday the 13th, and I've got a call from the 512, and I think that's Austin, Texas, our very own Sigmund Bloom. Bloom, are you with us?
Yes, I am, and, you know, I really don't know what to say about that story. I thought you were going to say maybe the Jimmy Hoffa was in your Trailblazer when they threw it up, or you know, one of the great all-time mysteries was going to be solved.
Yeah.
You know, this is the second Friday the 13th this year. They're going to actually have three this year,
wow.
And I just have to say, when you talk about Syracuse, you know, I'm a class of '97 graduate of Syracuse University. diehard Orange basketball fan.
Congrats.
And it was truly surreal. But I got to agree with Mike that there was a point in the third or fourth overtime when they were struggling and it was difficult, but you just got this feeling that they were going to find a way to win. And it was really an epic game, and it was one of those games that embodies what all of sports are about. You know, when guys get to that point where all they have left is desire and the will to win, and I think it's something that really captivated the whole country. I mean, I want to say the first 20 or 25 minutes of SportsCenter was just about that game, and it was just a second-round game in the Big East tournament.
Well,
I'll tell you what, Sigmund, from my standpoint, when I was driving home, I was listening to it, and I'm like, wow, you know, second overtime, third overtime, next thing you know, I'm home, and what am I going to do? I'm watching that game, you know,
yeah.
And it became captivating to the entire audience.
Yeah, and I admire you for honoring your commitment and being on the show, man, because Q's is on right now, right?
Yeah, they're winning by two, and, you know, we'll see. It's the Big East tournament, the MSG, Madison Square Garden, is a great, great place. It's got some serious mojo. 3 years ago, Jerry McNamara put on a ridiculous show of last-second shots to lead Syracuse to the title, and, you know, they're giving everyone something to remember again. So even if this season ends up with a loss in the second round of the tournament, we'll always have that game last night that we'll remember.
Absolutely, man. And I had that thought in the back of my mind. I was in third overtime. I'm like, these poor guys got to turn around and play tomorrow. I felt sorry for both of them. Because, I mean, I know, Mike, you commented on that at the beginning of the show, but still, to go through what they had to go through in that kind of a war and then have to face a West Virginia who's just chomping at the bit, that's pretty tough thing to ask.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Syracuse played the night before, too. So and they're up by five now. Diefendorf just hit a three-pointer, so we'll see
what
happens.
So you're a graduate of the 97 Qs. Is that the year they played Kentucky? Or
96. Yeah,
okay.
It got within 2 points. I'll tell you, if John Wallace hadn't fouled out, we were gonna get Kentucky. We were gonna get them. We had them. That was a
yeah. You're right, Sigmund. If Wallace didn't foul out, because that was your big guy down low. If he don't foul out, you're good to go. But we were able to overcome that. But Jim Boeheim, what's your thoughts on Jim Boeheim? I mean, he's an icon in Syracuse. I mean, what's your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a dying breed, if you will, because this is a guy who went to Syracuse, was a graduate assistant in the basketball program, you know, came up as an assistant coach, has been the head coach for, I don't know, about 35 years, I think, more. And he actually had a sort of change in his life before that national championship team with Carmelo Anthony, where he married a younger woman, he had his first child, it kind of mellowed him out. He loosened up. Yeah, and he really became a loose guy. And, you know, he's got that 2-3 zone. And it's kind of like what we see in football, where if you have clarity and you have a certain scheme and you have a certain way that you think the game is played and you look for players that fit there and you just train players to be the best players they can be in that scheme, then you can make it work no matter what. And that's how Syracuse has kept that level of excellence. And, you know, they're coming off a couple of back-to-back NIT years, but this year it's good. But Boeheim is really beloved, and it's a throwback. And particularly Syracuse is such a depressed area. Upstate New York is pretty depressed. I mean, these times, every place is depressed. But the Syracuse basketball team really lifts a lot of spirits there. And I know last night did a lot for that.
There's so many things to say about what you just said. When you talk about Jim Boeheim and his dedication to the university, to Syracuse, and what he's done. You know, you don't see that happen very often, and that's pretty awesome. For what Boeheim's done, not only being a student at Syracuse, but being a player and now a coach, and he's gone through everything. He's seen every player. He's seen every player's excuse, every player's personal problems, this and that. And he deals with them on a personal level, or he wouldn't be where he is now. And I give Jim Boeheim kudos for that.
Yeah. Well, let's get talking. I mean, we've got that connection, Sig, because you know Patino and
right.
Boeheim have their history, and now here it comes again, very possibly tomorrow. I don't know what time that game is tomorrow night, but it's regardless of what happens, it's going to be a good one. Let's let's talk about these rookies coming up in this NFL draft, man. We've everybody's trying to sit here and figure out how valuable these picks are in Dynasty football, and we've got a lot of guys on the table to talk about, and thank God for this younger class of running backs coming out, because without that we'd be in a whole lot of trouble. And there's one guy I want to start this conversation with, and we can take this wherever you want to take it. I've got a list of guys that I'd like to hear your feedback on, but the guy I want to talk about is Donald Brown. Okay,
right.
For some reason I've just got this feeling about this kid, and it seems like he's impressing scouts at the combine. He's basically the hardest to tackle back to enter the draft in a long time, in my opinion. He's offensive Big East player of the year. He was an All-American. And this kid at the combine just blew us away off the charts with just about everything he did. So talk about Donald Brown and what you see this kid doing.
Sure, and definitely the combine was big for him. And he's a guy that it's difficult for people to really get that excited about in some ways when you're at the point where you're just breaking these guys down in a vacuum, because I'm going to compare him maybe to Matt Forte. He's not as big as Forte, but he is a rugged guy. And like Forte, he doesn't really make people miss. He doesn't run away from people in the open field. You know, he's not a dynamic back. He's not going to make a lot of highlight runs, but he just runs hard. He's compact. He makes pretty solid cuts. Sometimes he'll waste some steps and only do some jump cuts, but he always runs hot. He always runs with a sense of urgency. He's not the biggest back. He's not the fastest back. He's obviously very athletic. One thing he does have going for him is he's a real weight room rat. You know, he's always in the weight room. I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but I think he squats something in the 600s. And he has a really ridiculous lower body as far as strength, ability to push the pile, ability to drag tacklers. And he just runs with a lot of desire. He just runs hungry. And I think that you're going to see him be a late first, early second round pick. I think you're going to see him be a guy that really defies expectations, although those expectations now have caught up. So I think that right now I would probably have him number 3 on my board of running backs for fantasy football, only because I think that Sean Moreno is a little bit safer bet and LeSean McCoy has more upside. We can talk about a name that I didn't mention. But I think Donald Brown should be the number 4 overall pick in rookie drafts. If it's not a PPR league, maybe number 3. And I think he's going to be a solid player.
Yeah, and I tell you what, there's a lot of these dynasty leagues that are using this what's called a developmental draft, where you the year before you're taking you're getting into this feeling and this mode, and I love these leagues. You're taking your developmental picks the year before that, just as long as they're draft eligible, you're taking at least a round worth of developmental picks. So usually 12 to 14 guys, depending on the size of your league. And Donald Brown is like this year's Rashard Mendenhall, somebody that kind of came out of nowhere, not. And was off the radar for the top 12, and now is at the top of the list. So if you have that 1-1 rookie pick this year after the developmental draft, your 1-1 is basically Donald Brown right now, and it's a pretty popular pick. I'm getting lots of offers for it. Unfortunately, I have the 1-1. So
yeah.
And so we've got Donald Brown here as a guy that you have high on your board. I'm real high on, and then we've got this Beanie Wells from Ohio State. Now, I don't know if this is going to be the same Beanie Wells that ran the 62-yarder at Michigan, or is this the Beanie Wells that reportedly at the pro day ran like a 4.39? What's the story with that?
Well, I think that the Ohio State track is a little bit faster than the track at the combine. I think we all saw that anybody who watched the combine could see that he was running real loose. His upper body was real noisy. It wasn't real quiet like it should be when you're running a 40. He seemed to be pushing and straining. And if you watched him, you could see, hey, in a straight line, Chris Wells can motor for a guy that's about, what, 230, 235? There's no doubt about that. But when I see Chris Wells, I see a lot of Lawrence Maroney. Maroney can also motor in the open field. He's a pretty big guy, not quite as big as Wells, but he won't play hurt. And I think that's what we saw from Wells this year, too. And we saw some injuries. You know, and when you think about running backs and injuries, of course, they go hand in hand. But we saw Chris Wells suffer an injury that forced him to miss the biggest game of the year, the USC game.
Right.
It was a non-contact injury. It was
an
injury of cutting at the goal line. So, we saw in the Fiesta Bowl that he suffered an injury, and then he was sitting all on the sidelines by himself. He wasn't in the middle of the Fiesta Bowl. He wasn't rallying with his teammates. He wasn't into the game. He was just sitting by himself on the bench.
Well, yeah. I tell you what, guys, that's something that I want to bend you here for a second there, Sigmund.
Mm-hmm.
The combine, I've really had a hard time with it because it seems like in the last couple of years it was pretty good. This past year it wasn't much. Is the combine, in your opinion, what projected wide receivers, running backs, is it overrated? I mean, is the total combine overrated?
You know, Mike, I think that that is a question I'm going to say yes and no, because I think for the NFL teams, it's not overrated, but for a different reason than we think as spectators. What they're concerned with is the 6 or 8 hours that they spend with the doctors poking and prodding and telling, asking these kids, where did you get this scar? How did you get this? What, you were 8 years old? What, you had a bike accident? When did you went to bike accident? You have the doctor's records? You know, that's what they're doing behind the scenes. And then they're doing the interviews where they're getting a feel for this kid. You know, does it give them a warm, fuzzy feeling about bringing them into the organization? Or are they picking up some vibes that maybe this isn't the kind of guy that fits with their system, with their attitude? Now, the testing, I think, is going to show you how prepared somebody is. We talked a lot about this with the Andre Smith stuff that happened this week. Shows you how dedicated someone is. They know it's a job interview. I think that when you watch tape on somebody, you don't even need to watch a half a game on most players to know if they have real track speed or pad speed or both, or if they're dynamic.
Right.
You know, some guys, just when adrenaline's flowing, when the lights are on, that's when you see their true abilities. And some of these guys, you know, Chris Henry from Arizona a couple of years ago, I mean, he was as athletic as Chris Wells, and the Titans took him in the second round. But as they saw, you know, athleticism does not necessarily translate to playmaking ability. So in that sense, it is overrated. But you still see everybody on a level playing field, if you will, all compared against each other in the same test, on the same surface, with the same official timing, same judges. And in that sense, we do get some sort of idea of where they rank against each other with pure athleticism, but there's a lot more to the game of football than that.
Mike, right. And, let me just break in like a No'Shawn Moreno. Let's face it, he failed at the combine, but this kid could be a perfect back in a perfect system, even though he didn't do good in the combine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No'Shawn Moreno, I think, I have him as the number one running back on my board. And I think he'll be the number one running back off the board whenever the draft comes. I think he'll be the number one running back drafted. And it's real simple. He has the determination. He has the instincts. He has the heart. He is an all-around back. He can do everything you ask, you know, pass blocking, receiving, getting the tough inside yards. Is he going to run away from anybody? Nah. He's not going to break more than 20 or 25-yard runs probably. He's quick, but he's not that quick. You know, he's not like LeSean McCoy. He's not like lightning in a bottle, but he knows how to set guys up. We see these debates every year. It's what's fun about this time of year, but we see a lot of the same debates year after year. In this case, No'Shawn Moreno, it's all about he knows exactly how to play the game as a running back, but he's average athletically. I think historically those guys end up working out. It's the guys we look at as historical failures are the ones that have all the athletic ability in the world, but they don't know how to use it. So I would take No'Shawn Moreno in a second over McCoy, over Wells, over Donald Brown. I think you're going to see him rise up. And remember, even though he's
over Hayward Bay.
Sure, absolutely. And Hayward Bay, I think, is a perfect example of a guy who has all the athletic ability in the world and will make plays that a few NFL wide receivers could make. But at the same time, he's not consistent.
Mike, I told you before the show started, Sigmund Bloom is one of these guys you could just sit and listen to, and he'll just keep going. It's just amazing. You have this talent, man. I mean, obviously you know it, but it's just something that Dynasty and Fantasy players just love to hear you talk. And you're getting a lot of love in the chat room. Guys are talking about your rankings. They're talking about the combine. Dead Sticks making in the comments saying he's really, you know, shying away from those guys that shoot up the board due to the combine. And then Daydricker Josh comes on and loves Shady McCoy. And we're going to talk about Shady McCoy because, obviously, I've seen on a couple of boards here, and Josh mentions it, that Arizona is possibly a landing spot. Now, Shady has a March 17th pro day, and I'm just wondering, Sig, what's he going to show? Is he going to show the world that he's worthy of a first-round pick?
I think so. I think that it actually worked out better for him that he didn't work out the combine. He was sick. He was about, high 190s, which is not really the weight he plays at. And – he wasn't, you know, I do think that he might have run in the low 4.4s, maybe high 4.3s. I can tell you that he ran in the 4.2s as a high school player. Now, that was at a Nike camp where they kind of slant the track downhill a little bit. So, you know, he's not a legit 4.2s guy, but he has the fifth gear. He has the breakaway speed. He's unbelievably dynamic in the open field. You know, he is the kind of guy who is truly elusive. If anything, he's still learning how to use the immense physical talent he has. Now, Pitt rode him really hard. I think that what you're going to see with McCoy is he's also only 20 years old. His body's not really mature yet. I think that he would get turned into mincemeat if they threw him into the crossfire right away. Look what happened to Darren Fadden this year. He also came into the league really young. You know, and his body almost fell apart. Two turf toes on both feet. You know, that was happening to Fadden. So McCoy, he may have to wait a year or two before he gets up to speed, but I think the Arizona rumors are founded. I know for a fact that one of the people on the phone with him telling him to come into the NFL was someone else from the University of Pittsburgh who came into the league when he was young, Larry Fitzgerald. So I think that that would make a lot of sense to reunite those guys. And I think that McCoy, you know, if you're looking for the guy in this draft who could be special, who could be in that top three, I call them the Uber studs. You know, those players are like having two players in your lineup when you have them in your lineup. McCoy is the guy who has that upside. I don't know if he's going to hit it. He's got to ratchet up his game a little bit. But when you watch him, he's the kind of guy who makes those plays that'll make you stand up out of your seat, because he'll do things that almost look like it's an optical illusion. It doesn't seem like someone should be able to make some of the weird jump cuts. So Matt Waldman, who just joined Football Guy staff, put it well. And he's like, sometimes it looks like the field turned into a trampoline whenever he would make some of his cuts. So yeah. I love watching McCoy, and I think that, you know, I can't blame somebody for taking him over Marino, just because the upside, he's the highest ceiling guy of the running backs in this class.
Well, Sigmund, yeah, I'd like to get your analysis about maybe last year's class, this year's class, and next year's class. Take the 08 class, this year's class, and the 2010 class, and what would you rank them?
I think that last year's class was probably better. I mean, this year's class was really saved by the underclassmen coming in. And the senior class this year, you know, there were some guys who had a chance to be some big-time prospects if they had good years, guys like James Davis and Javon Ringer. They didn't really do it. There's some guys coming on late, like Andre Brown. But really the underclassmen saved this one. You know, last year we had, Matt Forte, Steve Slayton. Now, obviously, some of this is hindsight. Rashard Mendenhall was the third or fourth guy off the board? Of course, Jonathan Stewart, who a lot of us love, McFadden. You know, last year's class of running backs, I think, is one that's going to go down in history as an all-time great class. And then you look at next year, and, one of the things about looking at next year's class is we see it every year, that you can't really say until the chips fall where these guys are going to end up, because every year there's
right.
one guy, Mendenhall, Donald Brown, that comes out of nowhere. But I will say, you can look and you can see guys like Javon Best, Noel Devine at West Virginia, Stephon Johnson at USC. There's some really solid guys, Charles Scott, LSU. And I still like Keelan Williams if he can ever learn how to hold on to the ball. you look at some of these guys. Keelan Williams is a guy who I think athletically is on the level of Rashard Mendenhall or Chris Wells.
Yeah.
He's had serious fumble problems.
So
yeah,
this year's class is probably one of the more weaker that we've seen, let's face it.
It is, it is. And, without McCoy and Moreno and Chris Wells coming out, I don't think there's anything – I don't even think Chris Wells is a franchise back. As you can tell by me leaving him out of the conversation, now, I'm not as high on Wells as I am on the top three. Without those guys coming out, what you're looking at are a lot of nice role players. And maybe someone like Andre Brown could surprise. Maybe someone like Rashad Jennings could surprise.
Right.
For the most part, you're looking at committee backs, guys that help take load. You know, maybe there might be 3 or 4 weeks out of the year when someone next to them goes down with injury and they have some pretty good stats, but nobody's just going to take over, nothing like last year.
Man, Sig, I feel sorry for you, man. Syracuse in overtime
again
tonight. Wow.
Hey, Friday the 13th, man. You know, this is
man,
just – you know, I've got to say, all right, one of the things – that about this, you know, since we're back on it, is if you were watching the game last night, Leo Rottens Andy Rottens was the guy who hit the three-pointer for Syracuse to put them up 113-110 to start out the sixth overtime, right?
Right.
And his dad, well, let me back up for a second. The longest game in Big East tournament history before last night was a Villanova-Syracuse game in 1981, the first Big East tournament. And his dad, Leo Rotten, hit the three-pointer to win that one. So, again, more Friday the
13th. Wow.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, of course, you know, the funny thing is all kinds of people who probably didn't watch college basketball all year who caught that game yesterday tuned in tonight to see what Syracuse was going to do. So, of course, they'd have to do something like this for an encore.
Well, we're probably the only show in town that kind of blends college basketball to pro football and combine and pro day, just kind of all in together. It's one big conversation for us. And that's kind of how we like it. But I want to kind of get us back on point here, you know, with this McCoy, LeSean McCoy. I had him as my one. I picked him as my 1-4 developmental pick last year ahead of DeMarco Murray and a couple other guys there that were just kind of in the conversation at the time. And I'm hanging on to this kid, and I really like what I see. And I'm kind of like you. I think he's in that discussion. But I know the hard thing that dynasty players have to get their heads around if they want to win and compete is not sitting there and not necessarily just making the right pick when you're on the clock, but anticipating what this guy is worth, and obviously makeup of your team is pretty important, but where do you rank a McCoy or a Well or a Moreno or a Brown, three guys that we have very high on our list this year, do we rank them in terms of what kind of back would we give up or what kind of receiver would we give up at this point? I mean, would you give up a Clinton Portis? Would you give up a Reggie Bush? Would you give up a Joseph Addai for one of those guys? And so, go ahead.
I think that's the right question to be asking. No, I think that's the right question to be asking. And one of the things we want to say as far as rankings, I will be, Syracuse just went up 65, 63. I will be putting out the first top 20, the top 100 on Monday. A lot of people have been asking me about it. And, we've been thinking of Fast Five TV, our passion project. But then the Bloom 100 will be coming out. So you'll see how these guys rank against each other. But ranking them against the current players, I think, is a great question. And I do think you pretty much hit the break point because Clinton Portis, Reggie Bush, Joseph Addai, those are my 17, 18, and 20 running backs. I'll toss another name out there, LaDainian Tomlinson, Ryan Grant. These are the guys in that kind of range. And I think these are the guys that you're looking at. And I'll say it comes down to this because this hobby that we do, this thing that we love so much, it comes down to your gut feelings, right? And if you watch Donald Brown, if you watch LeSean McCoy, if you watch LeSean Moreno or Chris Wells, or in your PPR league, you watch Michael Crabtree, or even, if you start three wide receivers with no PPR, Crabtree gets into the conversation, and you just feel like you have that certainty that you know this guy's going to do it, then you have to pull the trigger. You always want to go down with your beliefs. And I think that range that you talked about is exactly where, you're going to get two or three more good years out of Portis, maybe. One or two more good years, maybe three out of Tomlinson. Addai could become a role player at this point. Reggie Bush, we're not sure about his knees at this point. These are the guys where if you're going to pull the ripcord, now it's time to pull the ripcord because we brought up LaDainian Tomlinson sitting on the bench. And I have to say, and I made a post about this in the Shark Pool about a year ago, about this time when I traded Tomlinson for Frank Gore and Zach Miller, and a pick that ended up being the fifth overall pick this year. Because I said, just seeing him on that bench, I felt this sort of voice in my head say, it's time to trade LaDainian Tomlinson. And I think that obviously, to get for him now is a lot less than we get for him then. I think the same thing is going to happen with Clinton Portis. I think the same thing might be happening with Brian Westbrook. For that matter, I think Brian Westbrook could be a guy that you see Moreno or McCoy end up in the Philadelphia Eagles uniform at the end of draft weekend. So Westbrook could be a guy who's headed for a big drop in value. So if you're mulling trading Westbrook for a 1-2 or a 1-3, Portis for a 1-2 or 1-3, and you believe in these running backs, I would say you pull the trigger.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think those are the types of guys you try to trade, the guys that have a definite end in sight. And, if you can make a run at the title, it's always nice. But if you can reload and afford the ability to reload and still compete, timing is everything in Dynasty. And, I mean, we've left out the big name here for a reason because I want to talk about Michael Crabtree, the stress fracture in the left foot. How serious of an injury is this, and how concerned should we be? Because I know Oakland has their sights on him. I'm sure it's what Jamarcus wants, but what's the situation with this injury to Crabtree?
Well, he did the smart thing. He had the surgery. They were talking about he was going to run at his pro day and then have the surgery, which really was pointless. Syracuse went up by 5 with 2:16 left. They went and he had the surgery.
I'm watching it right now. I'm on it, Sigma.
And I'll say this, okay? He did the right thing, and this is all very reminiscent of Adrian Peterson a few years ago when he ended up falling to the 7th pick because he had a broken collarbone. And something about NFL teams that if they can't watch you run and do your thing, there's just a sense of security that they lose because really Adrian Peterson should be in the Cardinals uniform or you know, they had a chance to take him with the 5th overall pick. They took Levi Brown instead, you know? And I think with Crabtree, there's going to be teams looking back on that have that same thing. I think if people pass on him in the rookie draft, I think you have the number one pick in the PPR league. It's Crabtree. If you watch him on tape, he is an extremely rare prospect. I don't care if he ran a 4.7. You can see him run away from guys in the open field. You can see him run guys over in the open field. He attacks the football. You know, he reminds me of Brandon Marshall, basically. He attacks the football like he's making an interception. He runs angry. He runs like a running back.
As you don't have the character of Brandon Marshall.
Exactly. No, and that's, you know, why did Brandon Marshall fall to the 4th round? We're obviously seeing some of that.
No.
I think that, you know, Michael Crabtree is going to be a 90 or 100 catch guy. He's the only guy to ever win back-to-back Biletnikoff awards, and he did it as a freshman and a sophomore. So, I mean, I don't know what there was left for him to prove, and it's all there on tape. He has ridiculous ball skills. He's an unbelievably strong runner. You know, he's reminiscent of Anquan Boldin at times, the way he runs in the open field, and he just plays like he's out there to club heads, basically, which is something very rare in a wide receiver. So I totally endorse Crabtree. I hate to use the term can't miss because those are things that we can rewind and play this about a year from now when Crabtree's like on Charles Rogers Lane or something like that, and it'll sound really stupid. They're always can't miss guys. But based on what I've seen on the field, Crabtree's a can't miss guy.
Well, I'm going to put another name right up there in his category, Jeremy Maclin. Every time they see him, he's the best player on the field. He had a 4.4, 3.40 thereabouts. I don't know about the timing, but I'm hearing these talks about this MRI. I don't know what's going on there, but he seems like a perfect fit for the Jets.
Oh, he does. He does. And you mentioned Crabtree to the Raiders, and in my latest mock draft over draft guys, I put Darius Heyward-Bey, the pick to the Raiders, over Crabtree. I said Crabtree fall to number 8 to Jacksonville. Only because we know from history that nothing is more important to the Raiders to Al Davis than the 40 time, and the fact that there's no 40 time for Crabtree, and that Heyward-Bey burned a 4.3. Don't be surprised. Don't be surprised if Davis makes that call, because it's well documented that, you know, speed is basically the number one thing. Everything is secondary to that in the scouting report. But you know, Maclin's an interesting guy. I compare Maclin to somebody like Ted Ginn. Now he's bigger than Ginn. He's thicker than Ginn, you know, so he's not going to get pushed around the same way Ginn did. But much like Ginn, the guy has ridiculous straight-line speed. He has truly world-class speed. He has a fifth gear that very few players in the NFL have. He doesn't have that much wiggle, though. He doesn't have that much side-to-side, open hips. He's not a polished receiver in that sense. If you watch Missouri games, you know, you didn't really see wide receivers running these routes with crisp cuts in them. They're basically running the spot. Or in Macklin's case, you know, just going over the top and challenging the safeties and things like that. So he's going to have to learn to be a polished receiver just like Ted Ginn is having to learn. But I think he's got more upside than Ginn. And I think that, you know, he's going to be a player who's, as a wide receiver, he's probably an early second-round pick, maybe a late first-round pick. But as a receiver and the returnability you get, just like Ginn, that returnability really pushes him up the board. And I think the Jets would be lucky to get him at 17, but he might fall to them.
Sig, would you trade Vincent Jackson for Jeremy Maclin?
You know, at this point, if Vincent Jackson, let's put it this way, if Vincent Jackson was my first or second wide receiver off my bench and I was a Maclin, truly a Maclin believer, I'm not totally on a Maclin train, but I could see that being a solid pick. If Vincent Jackson's numbers are probably a little bit high from last year just because I think that you know, Phillip Rivers isn't going to throw 34 touchdowns again. I really like Malcolm Floyd there. I think if they get Malcolm Floyd back and no one signs him away, giving up a second-round pick, that Malcolm Floyd's going to pass Chris Chambers. But they have Gates, who was hurt. Remember, Gates was hurt last year for almost the whole season. So there was more targets going Jackson's way. So I do think that Jackson probably had one of the better years he's going to have in his career statistically, which is another reason maybe to trade him now. So I advocate that in general. But I definitely think that that's a kind of something you would look at as long as, like I said, if you were depending on Jackson, and then you were training to Macklin, you're not going to get the production out of Macklin. Training for Crabtree,
right.
you're going to begin the production right away. Macklin.
If you had, say you had Dwayne Bowe and Vincent Jackson, yeah. Would you trade Vincent Jackson for that?
Oh, I mean, Dwayne Bowe, I think, is about, with Matt Castle in town, Dwayne Bowe is about to explode. Dwayne Bowe, we could be looking back at his 2009
yeah.
season, the season when he joins those guys. In that Andre Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald
right.
kind of category,
absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
So I think at this point you're only trading for Bo, and you know I have a bag over my head. I made a trade during the season last year to trade Bo to get some depth, not depth because
yeah.
they start a lot. But anyway,
right.
I'm doing that thing and starting to talk to my own team. The point is, don't be like me. Don't trade Dwayne Bo. Trade for Dwayne Bo.
Yeah.
Mike's in hyperactive too. He has Dwayne Bowe, and he keeps getting offers. And I tell you, don't trade Dwayne Bowe. That's just a good rule of thumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to get off of him.
Yep. Another player here, Darius Hayward Bay, 4340. We talked about him a little bit. If you want to talk Hayward Bay or even a name, an obscure name like a Johnny Knox from Abilene Christian. He was a late second. And he's just blowing it up in Indy, and scouts heard how fast he was, but until they saw him run and catch the ball, he's running like 4.29s, 4.3, 4.40s. This kid seems to be skyrocketing up the draft board, kind of like Greg Jennings did.
Yeah, I think that he's about a fourth, fifth round pick at this point, which is a guy that when we were covering him at Texas versus the Nation, he wasn't even draftable on a lot of people's boards. You can go to draftguys.com, check out his profile if you want to see this guy. But what we noticed about Johnny Knox right away was he looks like one of those guys that the ball controls him. You know, in El Paso, the wind can howl up there. We saw a 3-0 bowl game this year because the wind was so bad in El Paso. And the wind was like a visible hand pushing the ball left and right. And he would just, his body would just naturally move with it, like the ball was remote controlling him. And then we saw that straight line speed. And you can see all this stuff in his profile. And, you know, he's definitely a guy, I think, that you're seeing rocket up boards. And as far as Hayward Bay goes, you know, I would compare him, let's talk Chris Chambers, I think, yeah. Let's talk Plaxico Burress out there. You throw him an easy pass within his frame, the hands are inconsistent, they come and go. You make him make some sort of twisting, acrobatic catch over the shoulder, you know, two guys undercutting his legs, and he finds a way to make it. So that's the kind of guy he's going to be. He's going to be inconsistent, but he's also going to be a guy who makes plays that few guys can make. And I think Hayward Bay is probably going to end up being a top 15 pick before it's all said and done because he's so rare. But we've got a lot of great wide receivers at draftguys.com to talk about. I mean, Jarrett Dillard's, I think, a guy. Talk about Greg Jennings. I think Jarrett Dillard is the guy who could be this year's Greg Jennings.
It is draftguys.com is the website where you can get all the action and all the advice from Sigmund Bloom and all the guys there at NFL or it's, I'm sorry, draftguys.com. And you guys are doing Draft Guys TV as well. Some of the technology you guys use was first top notch, man. When I first saw the videos and the way you guys were using that, I mean, it was really impressive stuff. You guys, everybody listening has to check that out if you haven't already. Most of our listeners, Sig, are high-stakes fantasy players. Most of the time, I would say about 70% of our audience are high-stakes fantasy players. So they're probably familiar with you. And a lot of these high-stakes fantasy guys aren't dynasty guys, but they're getting the fever. And they're coming in slow, and they really didn't pay a lot of attention to college. And now a lot of them are coming on board and saying, hey, what's this dynasty thing all about? And I think dynasty high-stakes is the next kind of evolution of high-stakes fantasy football. So We'll see if that comes about, but I know the interest is definitely picking up with some of the high-stakes event operators, and so that's why we want to introduce Dynasty Football to a lot of this audience. Any other guys, Mike, that you wanted to ask Sig about? And I tell you, in the chat room, they're asking for sleepers. They're asking for who's the Eddie Royal this year.
I was kind of curious as to if he knows any more about the – deal with McDaniels and Jay Cutler in Denver and
yeah.
What's going on there? Because, you know, let's face it, what we hear is it's pretty volatile. So I'm not sure. And plus you got 30 seconds to go and Syracuse is still up. So I'm keeping
yeah.
track of that too.
By two. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, for those kind of questions, I would definitely always defer to Cecil Lammy, who co-hosts Audible with me, and he covers the Broncos. His version of the story basically was that the Broncos weren't shopping Cutler, and it was only when Castle became available that Josh McDaniels fielded the phone calls, and it was really something they were only looking at when Castle was available, which makes a lot of sense. I mean, McDaniels knows that Castle is going to run that offense true to its conception. You know, he's going to know the terminology. Castle could become a coach, basically, and teach everybody else there the offense. But really, they weren't looking to trade Cutler in any other kind of trade, and Cutler had his feelings hurt. And I understand that this kind of stuff kind of happens all the time, but usually quarterbacks are they're tactful enough to keep that stuff out of the public eye. Cutler's kind of a shoot from the hip, you know, just say whatever's on his mind. And I think that that's something that he probably wishes he hadn't done at this point. But I think that it's going to be something that blows over. I think that this is just new kid in town kind of stuff. I remember when Mike Tomlin came into town for the Pittsburgh Steelers, my beloved Steelers, he let go of Joey Porter and then rankled Al Fanica's feathers. So that's just how it goes. The new guy
has to kind of... That's just kind of the way things go when a new kid, quote, new kid on the block comes to town. Mm-hmm. So,
absolutely.
Sig, in one word, I want you to describe these quarterbacks here that are coming out. Because
okay,
I don't want to devote a lot more than that to these quarterbacks.
Some of them are worth over.
Yeah. Stafford?
KG.
Sanchez.
Precise.
Not really.
I'm gonna put two words together. Alex Smith, maybe.
Not ready.
Not ready. It's definitely possible. No pocket presence.
Let's move here to Pat White.
Wide receiver. Two words.
Okay.
But
all right.
No. Go ahead.
They're asking in the chat room, Curtis Painter.
For Curtis Painter, I would just say, pro. I mean, it's two words, but it's one quality. You know, he's pro ready. He's a guy that can actually step in and play. I'm not sure he's going to be a starting quarterback, but he's smooth. You know, I'm going out of the one-word rule, but I think that something's going on in Purdue where that system helps guys know the kind of decisions they have to make in the NFL, throwing the ball in small windows, anticipating routes. I think Painter's really underrated.
Aiden North, Sigmund, the game is over. Syracuse moves on.
Oh, man, that is not the team I wanted to play, but okay, all right, I'll take it.
How to be mad. Yeah, Patino and Boeheim, and, you know, we'll see.
Scott versus Sigmund. Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Louisville could end up getting a third number one seed for the Big East this year. It's going to be reminiscent of we're looking like, 23, 24 years ago when the Big East had three of the four number one seeds. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Great year for the Big East, though.
I think that's going to happen. Let's talk about let's switch gears a little bit. Again, we're still in the dynasty discussion with Sigmund Bloom of the Audible and DraftGuys.com. DeSean Jackson, Donnie Avery, talk about one or both of these guys and what you see is their are they going to continue on those hot streaks?
I think that Avery will. I think that remember Avery was playing with that stress fracture in his hip or something like that. I think, I see him as a guy as long as the quarterback play is there, that he's going to be a burner. DeSean Jackson, I'm not 100% sold on. I see him as a good guy like when McNabb's plays break down, things like that. But we have a couple of guys on Draft Guy TV that are those kind of wide receivers. Jarrett Dillard was one. And I said I would compare him to Greg Jennings. I think if you watch the Jarrett Dillard profile at DraftGuys.com, you'll be pretty sold on him. Deion Butler's another one. And, you know, there used to be a time when if you were a 5'10", 180, 175-pound wide receiver, you were too small. And all these wide receivers who broke out last year were the too small guys. So I think that NFL teams are going to give the smaller wide receivers a longer look this year. I honestly think Dillard can be a starter in the NFL and a very good one.
Talk about two more guys at the running back position, Felix Jones and Pierre Thomas.
Yeah, Felix Jones, you know, the word is he's going to get more touches, and everybody saw when he had the ball in his hands, he was dangerous last year. I mean, he could take any touch to the house, and I think it'd be a good thing for Marion Barber that he'll be getting more touches because Barber's the finisher, remember, and Barber was a top 10 back when Julius Jones was getting a lot of carries, over 200 carries. Barber will be fine. You know, I really think that, Felix Jones is a guy whose value is only going up. Pierre Thomas maybe is a sell high right now. We kept hearing about LT. If he was going to leave the Chargers, the Saints are going to be interested. I wouldn't be shocked, you know, in my latest mock, I almost put Nochon Moreno to the Saints at number 14. I don't think they're sold on Pierre Thomas. He had a good finish to the year, but they gave him the shot at the beginning of the year, and he didn't really seize it. He's solid, but he's the kind of guy that you can improve from. And I think that they're going to have a chance to improve from him with their first or second round pick. So I think Pierre Thomas could be on thin ice. That being said, if he gets through to the beginning of the year without any competition, he's going to be a valuable player.
So they're pretty much sold on Reggie Bush being in the slot, and they're going to have somebody behind Pierre Thomas maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that we're going to see, you know, I still think Aaron Secker has looked as good as Pierre Thomas when he was healthy. That doesn't really to reflect on Thomas as much as that in that role that Thomas has had, a lot of guys could be productive. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see them maybe go after somebody who gets cut early in training camp, or you see them maybe try to develop a fifth or sixth round running back. I think that the, you know, the New York running back situation is far from settled.
Yeah. Sig, if there's one guy in this, I'm going to bounce back here to the draft class. I just go back and forth all night. It's Friday the 13th. If there's one guy that epitomizes Enigma for me, it's Percy Harvin. Mm-hmm. I've got a dynasty team in the backyard brawl. It's called All Percy all the time. It's a guy that I was really high on. And what do you see him? What is his role in the National Football League?
I really can't say, Scott. I don't know because this is a guy who's coming into the draft as a wide receiver, yet if you watch the combine, he didn't run routes. He didn't run the gauntlet. He didn't do what the wide receivers are doing. Most of his good plays were out of the backfield at Florida from a running back position. So I don't know what you do with a guy like that. Maybe he can be a wildcat quarterback. You can have some special plays for him and things like that. Maybe he develops on the same path as somebody like a Devin Hester, but I think that he's far from being a polished wide receiver. I left him out of the first round of my mock just because I think that teams are going to look at him and say, yeah, what do we do with him? So I agree. And another guy, you mentioned the Enigmas of the draft, I think another guy is Mike Goodson out of Texas A&M, because if you watched him back in his freshman year, he looked indistinguishable from Reggie Bush. He was unbelievably dynamic, and things just went downhill from there with injuries and falling out with the coaches. And he pretty much had to leave Texas A&M. It wasn't his choice to leave this year. That being said, you know, we know that he's got the juice. We know that this guy can get it done. So he's another one who could be out of the league in a year or two, or he could return to form and be a starter in the NFL.
Sig, we've got just 2 minutes left. I want to give the floor to you, and we appreciate you coming on and talking Dynasty with us and this combine and the pro day. Where can everybody, if they don't already know, we may have some new listeners because we are on the fantasysportschannel.com, where can they find more of Sigmund Bloom and the Draft Guys?
Yeah, draftguys.com. You know, we're going to be hitting you with position rankings, mock drafts, of course, Draft Guys TV, where we give you our favorite sleepers. And this is a passion project, and this is something that we do. We go out on the road and film with these all-star games. We get interviews. We break down the practice footage. We just love the draft. And we love it for the same reason a lot of people love fantasy football. During fantasy football season, I'm over at Football Guys. And really what it's about is when you watch the game, it just gives that much more depth. If you know more about the players, then there's all these plots that all of a sudden come out in the game. It just makes it that much richer of an experience to watch a football game by educating yourself. And that's why we like to do it early on. You get to know these guys in college. And then when they break out, you know, you see some of the human stories out there. It's just incredible. In addition to just seeing what guys like, you know, Steve Slayton and things like that, where you remember that he had it in him, and then you see him do it in Houston, and it's not that shocking. So it just makes the stories richer, and that's why we love to follow this game year-round, and we love the chance to get to talk to your listeners at Red vs. Blue, and you guys are doing a great job here, and just appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
Thanks a lot, Sigmund. We really definitely appreciate it and appreciate your insight.
Oh, hey, anytime, guys. I always love talking football.
It's been a lot of fun, man, and we're gonna definitely do it again, hopefully, as time permits for you. Congratulations on the Syracuse win. Tomorrow we are enemies, but after that, I'm sure we'll get along and we'll kick up some dynasty dust in some of these leagues, man.
Yeah. Everyone needs to get some sleep. All right. Thanks a lot, Scott. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, Sig. We'll take care. Guys, that was Sigmund Bloom of DraftGuys.com and the Audible. You guys can always find him. He's getting ready to release his top 100 where he mixes those rookies in along with the Dynasty players. For all you guys, we're going to come right back with college basketball, Louisville and Kentucky news. We're going to bring on Dr. Dish, our affiliate. in Louisville, and we'll be back for the available podcast. The show's going to be over here in about 15 seconds. So, Mike, hang tight with us. We'll be back next week. See you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to Red vs. Blue Sports Talk Radio, where Planet Red and Big Blue Nation collide, with your hosts, Scott Atkins and Michael Trent. Please join us next time.
Considering we've taken the Big East.
Time after time.
I love it.
Not a big Fred and Mercury fan, but...
But committed no crime and bad mistake. I've had a few.
Just sit back and enjoy.
I've taken my bows.
Everybody else can fast forward.
You brought me fame and fortune and everything that goes with it. I thank you all.
Thank you.
But it's been no bed of roses.
Roses.
No pleasure cruel.
And the game tomorrow is going to be intense. Dish, you with us?
Yeah, I'm right here, guys. How y'all doing?
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Gotcha.
A University of Louisville affiliate and number one Cardinal fan in all the world.
Yeah, we are here.
Winners of nine straight games since the Notre Dame debacle has turned a leaf and they are rolling. We're going to start with the West Virginia game on the game of the year on the night game on Saturday night. They were at West Virginia all day. Game day was there. Bob Knight was there. Just anybody was at that game, and Louisville comes on out on top, 62-59. Mike, this stat line on T-Will, 20 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, 6 steals.
So many blocks.
In my best Dick Vitale, he was he was after those shots. He was are you serious?
Are you serious? He was scintillating, baby. He was ultimately he was scintillating. Are you serious?
It's just been one of those. It's been one of those magic rides. I just sat there and watched the highlights of Louisville here on that game against Villanova, and seeing the highlight package. This team is the total package. They moved on this week and they played Providence, and they in the second round after Providence survived, and we won 73-55. We were 3 of 19 from the 3-point line, guys, and we won by 18 points behind Clark, 24-10-7, 24-10-7 for Clark, and Samuels 22-7-5. 10 of 14 from the free throw line. It's just another day. We're 3 of 19 from the 3-point line, and we beat Providence by 18. Okay, we had a bad day, and we still won by 18. We're sitting here complaining, and we still won by 18.
Then perfect distribution. Perfect distribution, Scott. That's what they need. And that's, you know, when I saw Clark making those 15, 16-foot fadeaways, I'm going, wait a second, this team, They've got the total package.
They got depth.
Yep. We've got depth. We go deep enough, and we've got defense. I mean, that defense we saw tonight in the second half, that was the best defense I've seen out of Louisville this year. It was that halftime speech.
Yeah.
Whatever Pitino said to his veterans, he said, guys, you're embarrassing us. You know, when you're playing this one-on-one basketball, you've got to be passing to win. And they started passing with tenacity. McGee was Defensive Player of the Year tonight. They win 69-55, down 8 at halftime. Tenacious defense. Terrence Williams, another solid night, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals. 17 points for Clark, 16 points for Smith. But Dr. Dish, McGee was the story of the game.
Oh, yeah. He was just – he just hawked that little – what's that little point guard they had for –
Scotty.
Yeah, Scotty Reynolds held him 2 points tonight, I think, you know, and just stayed in his grill all night, you know, and got about 3 charging fouls on him, you know, so really just
well, hopefully he can do that to Devendorf tomorrow night.
Yeah, did you see that shot just getting on Devendorf? Did you know he made that shot last night at the end of regulation that didn't count? It would have won it for him. Did you see that shot he made right before halftime?
Yeah,
tonight a 65 footer, wasn't it? It went in and counted, though.
Three-quarter
score, just a line drive that went in.
I wanted it to count, but at the same time, I knew what the refs were going to do. If it would have meant that UConn would win the game, I don't think you reverse that decision.
Yeah.
But since it was a tie game and was just going to overtime, I think the refs said, settle it on the court.
Yeah, well, when he watched the replay, it was when it hit zero and the light come on, it was just right on it, just leaving his fingertips or just on his fingertips, and just, I mean, they had to call it like that when they showed it down to the frame by frame, and that's what it was still on his tips, you know, it was still touching it, you know, so it was the right call, but man, it was just, if they hadn't touched that other guy, the Connecticut player coming in, you know, that was a great play, that was almost Well, remember that shot that lost to Kentucky, got beat by Duke but that year? It was about like that, you know?
Yeah.
1.8 seconds left thrown in from the other end.
There'll be commercials about that too, Neil.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the number one play, I think. I think that's what's leading up to it.
Tonight Louisville was 13 of 28 from the 3-point line, and they just completely came on fire in the second half because of passing. When they pass the ball and they have open shots, it's very hard to beat this team because they have so many shooters and their passing is tremendous when they want to.
Like a second, different, whole different game that second half, wasn't it?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Game.
that the second half was a different game. They came out with a tenacity. They were the ones controlling the tempo. They controlled the defensive pressure.
They just controlled
and
everything.
Every loose ball, instead of going to Villanova, who obviously wanted it more in the first half, mm-hmm. Louisville wanted it more in the second half, and they kept the heat on with defense, Mike.
Yep. There's no doubt about it. Defense wins games. Pitching wins games in baseball. Defense wins games in basketball, football. And what I'm seeing out of Louisville is tenacious. It's total tenacious defense. And
you know, they just seem to have so much more energy toward the end of the games, you know, of all these games.
Well,
you know, and I know that's due to that.
They seem to
do
that, Neil, because they know they've got that animal right there, and they pretty much got them corralled, and it's pretty much, here we go. Now, I've got him. Now I'm going in for the kill. And they have that way to do that. And, you know, there's not many teams in the nation that can do that.
You know, they're still talking like, you know, I'm hoping we win tomorrow, but they're still talking, and I think, dang, if we win tomorrow, I don't see how they can keep us from getting number one seed, but they're still saying that we might not get a number one seed. A lot of them are still talking it.
They're wrong. They're wrong.
I thought everybody in the Big East.
There's 16 teams in the Big East, and everybody plays everybody once. You know, home and away, or everybody plays everybody once this year. So that was 15 games, and then they played three other opponents. They played twice, and they play home and away on those three. So. Last year we had a real tough draw, and this year Connecticut and Pittsburgh had to play twice, which Pittsburgh won both times. And somehow they seem like Connecticut and Pittsburgh, and they lost last night, both of them, and they still in their first game.
It's a no-brainer to me, Neil. The bottom line is Louisville's face, you know, I mean, other than the Notre Dame hiccup, which they had, which teams had. Other than that, they lost to UConn, but, I mean, they played them good. They have met every challenge back and forth, whether it be at home or on the road.
Yeah, I think they've met every challenge. Seniors on the team.
So, in my opinion, Louisville is the number one seed. You got Louisville, North Carolina, and Memphis, I'm afraid, is
sneaking. Well, they're saying if Memphis wins tomorrow that they're going to take one of them spots, you know. Now,
Memphis is going to be the number one seed.
They don't play nobody at all in that conference.
I know that. I know that. But
Tulsa, what the heck? You know, they ain't really. They were beaten.
Well, who's it going to be? Oklahoma? Oklahoma just, I mean, they had their
big
game.
They got four or something here.
So, I mean, you can't make anybody out of the SEC a number one seed.
The ones they're considering, there are two they're considering. They're really saying Memphis is the one that's really, I think that's what.
But that's who it's got to be.
Number one. You know, I just don't think they deserve a number one for their competition.
I don't either. But who else is it going to be?
Well, they say Michigan State could possibly be. But, you know, now I'm not saying we need three out of the Big East or anything, but I don't know if there's three better teams around the country than what those three are, you know.
Well, I totally agree.
There's Syracuse.
You take your four
Syracuse
best teams.
Team and this West Virginia team and this Villanova team are all extremely tough. And
okay,
I look for them to make a lot of noise in the tournament.
Who's the four best teams? That's what you're going to break down. If you, Scott, and myself are together, we need to break down four teams that are the best four teams in the nation right now. Who is it going to be?
Well, I'd say Pittsburgh, Louisville, Pittsburgh, Connecticut, and North Carolina.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
And, you know,
yeah.
And I know right behind them is going to be Duke and Michigan State and Oklahoma and Memphis, you know, all four of them, you know. And I guess it really don't matter whether you're one or two, just your color of your uniforms, I think, really. But
well, I agree with you. My four, and I don't see any reason to change it. It's the four best teams in the country, Louisville,
yeah.
North Carolina, Pittsburgh, and UConn. And I think Louisville is all but guaranteed a number one seed after this run in the tournament and the 9-game win streak after Notre Dame. That's just what
I mean, they've always said it always goes for what you do at the end of the year. Not so, you know, I know teams lose in the beginning of the year. They're getting used to each other,
this is
together. And
preseason. The real season starts Thursday at noon.
Right.
And to come through what they call, arguably this year, they call it the toughest conference in the country, bar none, in all time. You know, they think it was the toughest conference ever. And toward the beginning of the year, and naturally they've had to beat the crap out of each other. And Louisville's only lost twice now, albeit they beat Notre Dame once, and they lost to Notre Dame after they come off a 7-game losing streak, you know. But they was, you know, Notre Dame earlier in the year had like a 50-game winning streak at Notre Dame, and they was ready for us that night. We fell in there, boy. I mean, they were hot that night, boy, hitting everything with the.
Hey, Dr. Dish, I hear a new hobby is sweeping Kentucky, the state of Kentucky, and that's knitting. Knitting is a popular hobby right now with the state of Kentucky. What's that
about? Shirt,
like,
shirt.
Yeah, I think I've heard something about that.
I don't know nothing about it. Pull me in.
Well, I hear a lot of Kentucky fans aren't even going to watch this knitting take place, but you know,
I won't.
The NIT. Yeah.
Nope. Not in tournament.
Not in tournament.
Well, you know, I tell you what, I think really the NIT is really going to be a great tournament this year for all the teams that are going to be in it. There's a lot of
Bill, good please, players. Please, please, stop.
Yeah, back up from the TV a little bit there, bud. Let's back up from the ledge. We're not going to be watching the NIT. If we are, we've got a problem.
One thing Elvis did, Elvis Presley, he did a long time ago. When he saw something on TV he didn't like, he shot it.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't own a gun, but I would do the same thing. I will not watch a single game of the NIT. I never have. I didn't last year or the year before or the year before that.
Yeah,
I
no
do
reason
not
to
watch the NIT.
I don't watch it much. I mean, I just until it gets down to the last few games, you know, but it's interesting to see who's
going to win. I'd rather watch women's basketball.
Yeah. Well, that ain't worth watching. That UConn team, if you watched anything about them this year, that UConn women's team is awesome, man.
Yeah. Well, guys, look, man, you know, we could talk a little bit of Kentucky, but I think that just depresses the Big Blue faithful, so I think we just let
it does,
go.
Because we got a frog-eyed coach and a guy that looks like a frog, and it's...
Mike,
I mean,
when you lose 9 of your last 13, you know.
I'm going to go on record saying I will not watch the NIT because I wish I had Tubby back. Because
Mike,
Tubby made me.
Go on record. Do you support the firing of Gillespie?
Well, yeah.
Well.
Hold on. I'm going to go on record.
You got to give him another year or two to get some people in there.
No. Exactly. That's where I'm going. I still support Gillespie.
Tubby knew he didn't leave him.
Cannot coach. He cannot coach. He's not a leader. You gotta have a leader to do that.
All right. Well, you heard it there first, gang. But hey, that was what an awesome interview with Sigmund Bloom, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
Was that not insightful or what? So we've got quite a lineup coming on to be on Red versus Blue and get a hold of this high stakes audience that we have. And we're going to keep bringing you guys that can just entertain us and give us that insight. Go ahead, Mike.
Are we talking football, UK football next week? Just kidding.
we're gonna talk a little bit of March Madness next week, and
damn it.
A lot of March Madness next week because everything's going to be on the line, and hopefully Louisville is still playing. If they get beat by a 16 or a 15 seed come Friday night, then I think we'll just cancel the show.
Yeah.
I doubt that.
I concur.
So, all right, gang. Well, this has been fun. We appreciate all of our listeners. You can obviously visit us on thefantasysportschannel.com. You can download us to your iTunes, your iPod or your MP3 player. You know, we just enjoy doing this for you guys, and we hope to have everybody back next week. So, for Mike and Dr. Dish, we're gonna say go Cards.
Go Cards.
Go Cards.
And
can't believe I said that.
Hey,
thanks,
Doc. Catch Glenn Beck tonight. The replay.
Uh-huh.
The replay is you got to catch Glenn Beck on Fox News.
I will.
Recorded it. It's Saturday at 9 o'clock as the replay. Saturday at 9. And did you guys get a chance to see the Jockey Show on Friday night?
No. I caught a little bit of it. I didn't get to see much of it.
You're missing the series of the year, man. You're missing it.
Okay.
Jockeys is the stuff. So, especially for you guys that are ready for getting ready for Derby coming up in May, which is all of us. So, that'll be fun.
One more thing.
A Derby show.
Good race is coming up right now.
Yeah, we got to do a Derby show.
Yeah, sure do.
Hey, we can do that.
We got to get some more races in here. They're getting ready to start going a mile and an eighth now. Some of these races start being a mile and an eighth. So we're getting that.
Nobody might not listen, but you know, well, we're going to do
your
it anyway.
Your Derby pick this year. You got one favorite going or anything? Or there's one running tomorrow that freezing fire.
Tampa Bay, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I'm not there with you yet. I'm still rooting for Big Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, you got an old fashioned. I think he's looking to be the favorite right now, and a early favorite.
Hey, Scott, thanks for that book by Cohen. I'm going to get it, and I've already got it, and it's going to be good reading material on the way down to Florida. I'm looking
there
forward to seeing that stuff.
Have a blast with it, man. Good leadership stuff. All right. Red versus Blue. We'll see you next week.
All right.
Bye, guys.
See you, Scott. See you, Neil.
Bye.
Bye.